This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
Are you ready?
Let's go.
From AMI Central.
Now circling in the neutral zone.
Here's the pitch on the way. 36 yards for the win.
This.
Here comes a big chance. The shot.
Is this the dagger? The neutral zone.
This is as good as it gets.
Now, here's your host, two-time Paralympian, Brock Richardson.
You know, most of the time I come on this program and I'm like really excited to do the show, really pumped up, and I am, until about 15 seconds ago when my co-host, one of them, swore and said the snow word somewhere in Ontario, Canada. I'm not even sure where it was. I'm going to have to ask her because I just tuned it out as soon as she mentioned the word snow. And that is Claire Buchanan. Claire, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I mean, my brother lives up pretty up north in Ontario. And I saw the most northern part of our province, woke up to the white fluffy stuff coming down.
It could just stay over there. Just stay up north and let's keep it up there. Yeah, I know people that are up in places like, you know, Sudbury, like way far north, will start having like really cold weather way before we do. And it's like, oh, it's coming. And we don't want to talk about it.
They give us like a warning sign almost being that far north.
Yes, absolutely. It's coming. Brace yourself. Someone we do want to talk to, though, is Cam Jenkins. Cam, how are you?
I'm doing okay. It's beautiful here, at least in downtown Brampton. It's a balmy 7 degrees Celsius, but blue skies. So any day that it's blue skies, that's a great day by my standards.
Yes. According to my Google Home, it says it's 7 degrees here in Kitchener, so that's pretty good. But although cloudy. Nonetheless, it's time to get into our headlines for this week. Let's do it.
The Premier Hockey Federation, or previously known as NWHL, will make ESPN Plus its exclusive U.S. broadcasting partner for the upcoming 2021-22 season, home to all 60 regular season games and the Isabel Cup playoffs. Me being a huge hockey fan and a hockey fan player myself, this is huge. I'm officially busy and not available because I am watching women's hockey from now on.
So that's why she's not available next week. Got it. Understood. And congratulations to Leon Draisaitl for scoring his 200th goal in just 481 career games, the fifth fastest in Oilers history to ever do it. He joins Wayne Gretzky, no surprise there, and Marc Messier in the top five. Congratulations to Leon Draisaitl. Really great to see that the Edmonton Oilers have started with a 4-0 record. And when you have a guy who can score 200 goals in such a short period of time, that is a great sign if you are out there in oil country.
Los Angeles County is seeking to compel psychiatric evaluations for Kobe Bryant's widow and others to determine if they truly suffered emotional distress after first responders took and shared graphic photos from the site of the 2020 helicopter crash that killed the basketball star, his teenage daughter, and 7 others, court documents say. Vanessa Bryant, whose federal lawsuit against the county alleges invasion of privacy, has claimed in court papers that she has experienced severe emotional distress that has compounded the trauma of losing her husband and 13-year-old daughter, Gianna.
The Canadian Olympic Committee has announced that all potential members of Team Canada for the 2022 Winter Games in Beijing must be fully vaccinated against COVID-19 in order to be named to the team.
Those are your headlines for this week. Let's check in on our Twitter poll question. We'll go back to last week. Will this year be the year that the Stanley Cup returns to Canada? 75% of you said no, and 25% of you said yes. I had hoped that that was going to be a little higher for the yes, but I have to say that I agree with this, that Twitter poll for sure. This week's Twitter poll question is about the Toronto Raptors. Do you think the Toronto Raptors will make the playoffs this season? Your choices are simple, yes or no. Go to our Twitter handles, which will be given out in a bit later on the program. Coming up next, we're going to speak to Renee Fossel, who is returning back from Tokyo after a fourth place finish in discus in back-to-back Paralympic Games. That conversation's next, right here on the Neutral Zone. Stay with us.
And welcome back to the Neutral Zone AMI broadcast booth.
Play ball.
And we are set to get this ball game underway. The first pitch brought to you by Brock Richardson's Twitter account at Neutral Zone BR. First pitch, strike. And hey, gang, why not strike up a Twitter chat with Claire Buchanan for the Neutral Zone? Find her at Neutral Zone CB. And there's a swing and a chopper out to second base right at Claire. She picks up the ball, throws it over to first base for a routine out. And fans, there is nothing routine about connecting with Cam and Josh from the Neutral Zone. At Neutral Zone, Cam J and at JWatson200. Now that's a winning combination. And this Oregon interlude is brought to you by AMI Audio on Twitter. Get in touch with the Neutral Zone. Type in at AMI Audio.
Welcome back to the Neutral Zone right here on AMI Audio. I'm your host, Brock Richardson, joined by Cam Jenkins and Claire Buchanan.
So guys, I wanted, before we get into it with Renee here, I wanted to shoot a little fun fact. We have listeners from all over Ontario listening in and hopefully all over Canada, but I wanted to give a shout out to that we have a few new listeners from small town in Alabama, Foley, Alabama, listening this week. So thank you for tuning in this week and listening to our show, and roll tide.
There you go. And you would never see snow in Alabama. So you wouldn't have to worry about swearing in Alabama with the snow word. It's a good thing.
Maybe they can send some warm weather our way.
You even mentioned that you'd been there for 5 years during the commercial break. And I said, and why would you come back from Alabama not seeing snow for 5 years? But you said you wanted to make the national team, which is a fair desire. So,
As they say in The Wizard of Oz, there's no place like home.
Absolutely. Having done a lot of traveling myself, that is so the truth. We're going to welcome in our guest. And today we're speaking to Mississauga-born Renee Fossel, who is a two-time Paralympian in the F38 discus category. Renee went to Tokyo with the record of the longest distance in Tokyo. So we're pleased to welcome her to the program, and she's going to talk all about her experience. Renee, welcome to the program. Nice to have you back.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Renee, let's start with the fact that your event was on the final weekend of the Paralympic Games. When did your journey begin heading for Tokyo, and how did you take advantage of the extra time that you had before your competition?
Yes, so my event was held on the second last day of events, which was September 3rd. So I left for Tokyo on August 19th. So we had two flights of athletes leave, and I was actually the later flight of athletes. So I had a bit less time than everybody else, but also considering it was one of the last day of events, it all worked out. We left early because we had to give ourselves enough time to acclimatize to the time difference, as well as get ready for training in the heat and different weather conditions. So it was nice to take advantage of getting used and acclimatized to all of that. And that was done at a training camp in Gifu, Japan. It was brilliant to have that opportunity to kind of get yourself organized and used to the conditions. And then once time was right, on August 28th was when I departed to the village to get used to the exciting environment that we have there, and as well as the stadium.
Now, if you had the chance to kind of have an input on your scheduling and when you would be throwing, do you have an ideal time or day or like part of the games that would, for you, fit more to make you feel more prepared and more comfortable?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I've been competing for a long time, since a young age. So I've had the opportunity to have my competition held on different parts of the schedule and major events. That being said, going into the games, I was always had the preference of being towards the end of the games because it provides you the opportunity to really get yourself in that mental state and, for me, prepared to see my competitors at the training venue and kind of gauge where they are, gauge where I am. So I did have a preference to be able to compete by the end of the games, but this games was the first time I'd competed in a very long time because of COVID. So going there this time around, I did find a very big difference in having my event at the end of the games. And I think that that was a challenge on its own. And I did enjoy the diversity of that.
Renee, you went into the event as the world record holder. Can you describe what that feeling was like being the record holder in that event?
Yes. One of my goals, I had two goals that I've set for myself. One of them was to be able to hold a world record, and the other is still pending. It was to be on the podium. I didn't imagine that this year would be the year that I could accomplish that goal, considering some of the challenges that were faced. And achieving that, it was at a meet in the middle of June. It was on a Wednesday. It was a local meet that was just meant to be there for fun. And I think that speaks volumes on, for me, having to throw a world record at a meet like that, because throwing that, it came out of nowhere. It was a distance about 2.5 meters further than I'd ever thrown before. And to be honest, I haven't quite hit that mark again. And I was just having fun. I was doing my thing. And it was exactly what I needed to do to be able to accomplish that. So I think moving forward, it's important to remember, especially for me and competing, and I hope something I can relate to anybody else, is just to really enjoy what you're doing, whether it's sport, professional, personal, and just enjoy that, because that's what matters, is just enjoying what you've done. And I think having that world record was good, but moving towards the games, it did provide a bit of pressure where I can look now and say, okay, we have to move back to really enjoying yourself and remembering a local meet on a Wednesday and throwing a record like that.
That's really incredible that you touched on how important it is to reflect on just loving the game and why you got into it and started. Moving forward, how do you place that into your training and your competitions to kind of mimic that feeling again?
Yes. So I do think it's very important that everybody take a moment to self-reflect inward on themselves. So for me, after that and after this experience, I'm a big mental health advocate, so I'm taking some time to talk to a sports psychologist to sit down and really feel the roots of when I first started sport, what my goals are, and how I can incorporate that passion, that excitement that I get when competing, and just make sure I can click on that right when I get to competition day. And just having that switch and self-reflecting and internal understanding makes a big difference on being able to understand yourself and the change moving forward in training. I've already started my next block, and I must say that I'm just really enjoying. I mean, it's week one, but being able to have that shift and change, I'm focusing a bit more on physical, but also the mental.
Hey, you have to start a week one somewhere. So if that's there's got to be a week one somewhere. So. Got to start somewhere. We are joined by Renee Fossel, who is a two-time Paralympian in Discus Throw, and you're listening to The Neutral Zone on AMI Audio. I'm joined by Claire Buchanan and Cam Jenkins, and of course, I'm your host, Brock Richardson.
Yeah, Renee, very proud of you for acknowledging mental health, first and foremost, because I'm a big advocate of that as well. And I'm glad that you're speaking to somebody through Team Canada, because that's so important to be able to do that and to be able to figure out your feelings and be able to move forward. So, you know, on behalf of all of our listeners, congratulations to you. That takes a lot of guts to do. So I just wanted to say that before I ask my next question.
Thank you.
So on the day of your event, there was a significant amount of rain and a torrential downpour is basically what it was. Can you talk about what that was like and some of the differences when you're competing in rainy weather or versus, you know, a sunny blue sky day?
Most definitely. Well, I'll just first start by describing discus throw, maybe for anybody that doesn't know that as part of track and field. So discus throw, it's a metal, it's a 1 kilogram discus that I'm holding. So it's got a metal rim. The one I was had held is carbon fiber. So it's very slippery when you're not in the correct conditions. And then you're throwing in a circle. And the goal is to either use movement or stand still, but to get that discus forward as far as I can get. So just alone with that, and then thinking about conditions, how having a rainy day versus a blue, beautiful day, I think viewers can understand, hopefully, that could make a big difference. But for me, on the day of the competition, I've never been to Japan. I've never thrown in rain like that. And Japan, let me just say that has some of the hardest rain I've ever experienced. So in the middle of competition, having that happen, I think it did make a pretty big difference in terms of my ability to hold the disc and to move across the circle in the first three throws. Almost everybody in the field, all the women were falling or losing the disc, faulting, so unmarked throws. So it was good in terms of having that diversity again to listen to your competitors, get to understand that we're all here on the same platform and we all just have to grind through it. So this next year, because World Championships next year, if I am to attend, would be in Japan, would be in their typhoon season. So it's good to hopefully, if it happens, look forward to redemption in terms of the weather and throwing again.
You've made Canada really proud, finishing fourth in consecutive Paralympic Games. Looking forward, what are you doing off the field, and what does it look like for kind of the next generation and upcoming Canadian throwers that are kind of eyeballing Paris and moving forward?
Yeah, so for me, I think it's like moving forward, I'm just looking at taking it step by step. I think it's good, and I think we have a lot of important growth that will happen with the Paralympics and different sports. Moving forward to Paris, I think there will be a big push for different athletes to focus and have a good integrated team to succeed at future games. So that can be hopefully the access to facilities, the access to integrated support teams, whether it's strength and conditioning, if it's nutritionist health. I think what we can do is really look and find athletes or just individuals with different physical disabilities that may be able to find and really enjoy sport and maybe get into it and have the opportunity to grow to Paris 2024 and future games.
Now, can you talk about your relationship with your coach, Ken Hall, and why has he been so important to your success?
Yes. So my coach, Ken Hall, and I, we have a very unique relationship. because I met him when I was 6 and he was my sledge hockey coach, or now para ice hockey coach. And now I'm 26. So having him be my coach at a young age for hockey and then have that transition into my entire track and field career, we've had the opportunity to really understand one another and grow together. He's seen me through almost every stage of my life. So for this Games, it was very nice because it was the first Games that I had the opportunity to have him not only be there with me as my coach, but to experience the whole entire Games with me. I'd never had him at the Paralympic Games, and I'd never had him coach me at a World Championship since 2011. So Ken Hall has been a huge part of my success professionally in sport, and he's also helped me grow personally within different transitions in my life and seen me through that. So I really do thank him for the support that he's given me thus far, and I look forward to what we can achieve together moving forward in the future. He's a great role model, and he's involved in many different sports too as a coach.
Oh yeah, and he's definitely been my coach as well, I totally understand what you mean about Ken Hall and the way he is as a coach. Now, you've been all over the world, Renee. Is there a certain competition or a certain place that you loved competing at or being at?
I would probably say that I really did enjoy what stuck with me was going to New Zealand in 2011. I'm not sure if it stuck with me just because of the environment and where it is in the world, but I was also quite young, so I didn't get to enjoy as much. In the future, if I could travel anywhere, professionally or personally, I think if I had the opportunity to travel to Thailand, I would. But there's not many competitions there, so it'd probably be more of a personal leisure. To understand that aspect.
Really appreciate you taking the time to do this interview, and so glad we could showcase your success at the Games, and you did the country proud and us proud, because you know the nice thing is we all know each other personally around the table, and so great to have you on the show, and best of luck with training going towards Paris, and we'll have to have you on again down the line.
Thank you so much. I really do appreciate all you guys, and I hope to see you all in the future soon.
We hope so as well, and best of luck. That was Renee Fossel, who is a 2-time Paralympian and from Mississauga, Ontario, and she was joining us today to talk about her experience in Tokyo and a little bit of moving forward towards the next Games. Coming up next, we are going to talk a lot about Ben Simmons. If you haven't heard what's going on with Ben Simmons, we will fill you in, and I guarantee you we have some strong thoughts. On the other side of the break, you're listening to The Neutral Zone on AMI Audio. We'll be right back.
Message for the Neutral Zone, call now 1-866-509-4545, and don't forget to give us permission to use your message on the air. Let's get ready to leave a voicemail.
Welcome back to The Neutral Zone right here on AMI Audio. I'm your host, Buck Richardson, joined by Claire Buchanan and Cam Jenkins. And all I can say is buckle up for this next segment, because I have been fired up since I have put this segment together on round Wednesday when I put this segment together, and it's going to be a good one. So, Ben Simmons, let's talk a little bit about Ben Simmons. So let's take you back to the end of last season when Coach Doc Rivers was in a press conference and was asked the question, is Ben Simmons going to be one of your best starters in the future? Doc Rivers subsequently responded by saying, I don't know that yet. Ben Simmons was none too happy about it. However, we learned through the media that Ben Simmons was removed from practice and given a one-game suspension for his reluctance to physically and mentally engage with the rest of his team since the return with the team before the season. This, according to ESPN sources, has been an ongoing theme for quite some time with Ben Simmons. Now, I want to bring your attention to the fact that Simmons has signed a 5-year extension worth $170 million. This was signed in 2019 in the offseason, so he's in the midst of his second season with this contract, which means that there are three more to go. I'm going to lead this conversation off because I'm going to say, as an athlete, as a person who really would only dream to be in the position of Ben Simmons, playing on one of the greatest stages in the world, being able to represent a basketball team, represent a city, this is a privilege. It is not a right that you have to play on this basketball team. You have immense amount of talent, but this is a situation where you've been given this opportunity, and I'm bothered by the fact that you decide to not give it your all at a team practice. Because why? Because you're Ben Simmons? Nobody cares. You make the money, you play the game, and you play it to the best of your ability. You have earned that money because of what you've done in the past. Now go out there and show it on the court and in practice. That is what I have to say to lead this conversation off. I am very, very disgusted in one Ben Simmons. Cameron, I will let you have the floor.
So as I understand this correctly, this started, I believe it started when Doc Rivers basically didn't back up Ben Simmons when he said that he wasn't sure if he was the best person on, was it the best person on the team or you're starting?
It was Ben Simmons going to be one of your best starters moving forward?
Best starters. Okay. So when your own coach says, I don't know, and he says it in the public and not behind closed doors, I think Ben Simmons has a right to be really disgusted because he's given his all up to that point to the 76ers. He's been on an all-star defensive team, I believe. He is an all-star, and that's why he got that contract. So when your own coach is not backing you up and says, I don't know, of course he's going to be really upset. And then during the entire summertime, that when he didn't ask to be traded yet, and they were trying to trade him, and it was out in the open more so than a lot of other trades that are out there. And so that must have really hurt him, too, for giving his all in Philadelphia, coach not backing him up. So I understand now why he wants to get out of Philadelphia. And if management's been trying to trade him all summer and the coach isn't backing him up, saying he doesn't even know if he's going to be a starter, why would he ever want to play in Philadelphia again for that management team, that coach? Like, I don't blame Ben Simmons for wanting to get out of town, to be quite honest with you. And unfortunately, because it's a long-term contract, it may take a while to trade him because management has the hammer because of how long the contract's for.
Am I completely understand where you're coming from? And yes, coaches need to show that they are backing up their players. But at the same time, my brain goes to when Doc Rivers makes this comment last season, is he already recognizing that there's a work ethic issue? And they just signed this contract worth so much money and it's 5 years and he's got to be committed to this for 5 years. And I'm thinking that that commitment wasn't already shown already. And that's an issue because if your coach comes out and says, you know what, I don't think he is in the position to be one of our best starters. Me and as an athlete, I'm going to get my butt in the gym and work my butt off to prove him wrong. And that's what coaches want. They're trying to push you and make you play to the best of your ability. And to me, Ben Simmons is throwing a tantrum right now. And he's got his contract locked in. He's got the money. And I think the work ethic isn't there. And Kobe Bryant said a famous quote that he said, I don't relate with lazy people because he doesn't understand how you can't work hard at everything you do, especially when you're gotten to the NBA. You've worked your whole life to make it to this point. And why wouldn't you want to work your butt off?
And let me also add to this, Cameron, that Doc Rivers is no slouch. Doc Rivers has been around the block, has won a couple of NBA championships, I do believe. And this is, to your point, Claire, I agree 100%. When you get a contract, in this case of $170 million, they are paying you for what you've done and saying, we want you to go and continue this. And I have a feeling that Ben Simmons has decided, I'm going to take my ball and go home because coach doesn't back me up. Instead of doing what Claire is suggesting and get your butt in the gym and work it off so that you can be better in the future. Instead,
what else does Ben Simmons have to prove, though? He was NBA Rookie of the Year in 2018, and he was on the NBA All-Stars in 2019, 2020, and 2021. So I think he has a great work ethic because he's on the All-Star teams. You don't get to be an All-Star without being able to work really hard and to get there. Does his jump shot or does the scoring need to go up a bit? Yeah, absolutely. But with him doing all the hard work to be all selected to all of those NBA All-Stars and rookie teams, I don't understand where it comes that, you know, he needs to keep improving, but he's already worked really hard. And then for the coach to say, well, I don't know if he's going to be a starter. And then for them to try to trade him the entire time after he's done all of this, which I think all of those All-Stars show that he has been working hard. You know, I can see why Ben Simmons is so frustrated and just doesn't want to be there anymore.
I think for this, I think it's like the owner has said publicly, he can stay away all he wants, but he's got a 3-year deal. And unless there's something in it for my team and best suited for me, we signed Ben Simmons for a reason. And that reason is not to be off the court. And I just feel bad for the teammates, which kind of leads me into my next point, but I feel bad for the teammates because they have nothing to do with it. And you've decided to bail on what is your brotherhood and saying, nope, not gonna play because of what coach said, as opposed to taking the high road and saying, I'm going to be better because obviously Doc Rivers doesn't feel that way. And at the end of the day, Doc Rivers is the coach and Doc Rivers can make these decisions. And as I said, he's not a slouch. So this is no joke. Claire, I'll start with you on this one. What type of action, what can it do to a team moving forward?
Well, you know what? We see it every season, no matter what sport we're watching, that the best teams that have the closest relationships succeed that much more. And this is a big dent in just team morale all around. It's interesting that we only get the surface information about stuff like this. And I always want to ask why. Like, why did Doc Rivers make that comment? Why is this going on? Like, we're not getting enough information to make a complete kind of bias on it, because yes, we only see him not going to practice or not putting in as much effort as he should be in practice. But like, what is going on? Like, why is this happening? And what's going on between these relationships with both the coach and the management and teammates? Because this can't make it easier. It's not going to put them on a positive trajectory. And just like what's happening in Brooklyn, Kevin Durant said it best, that we can't worry about what Kyrie Irving's doing right now, because we as a team have a goal to be a contender, and that doesn't change with him gone. And Philadelphia needs to do the same thing, that as athletes, you get into that mental state of, okay, I can only worry about what I'm doing. So Ben Simmons needs to do the same thing and really focus on what he wants to do as a player and what he wants out of it. And the results will come from that.
Yeah. Like, I don't know what else to say in regards to that. You know, in a perfect world, yeah, Ben Simmons has a contract and he should be playing. And the contract that he signs basically says that you have to, you know, work hard or play to the best of your ability, you know, if you're under contract. And I can just see from his point of view where the coach didn't back him up. Management publicly has tried to trade him. Why would you want to go back when you know that basically no one is going to have your back and doesn't want to have you on the team because they're trying to trade you? So, and for impacting the teammates, it can go one of two ways. You know, if you're thinking that Ben Simmons was going to be there, but I would hope that the coach and management realized he wasn't going to be. So they should have a different game plan as far as when they get onto the court and think that Ben Simmons isn't going to be there. But if they don't have that attitude and wish Ben Simmons was there, they might tank or they might do very bad, you know, because they're just the mental part of the game of always having to be asked about Ben Simmons, that can be a toll on you. Or it could go the other way in the positive side of things. And it might end up being, okay, you know what? Ben Simmons doesn't want to be on this team anymore. We're going to show him and we're going to do really well and have a great season without him. And he's going to wish that he was back on this team. So it's going to be an interesting season for sure.
Do you think that these coaches are kind of getting fed up with young players coming in and saying, hey, you should build a team around me, and like throwing the focus off of an entire team success and putting more focus on what they're getting out of it? Because I think that's where this is coming from, is these up and coming stars that are already well beyond their years of basketball IQ and talent are coming into the league expecting to be the star and have teams built around them. And that just doesn't happen at the drop of a hat kind of thing. And I think coaches are getting frustrated with this frame of mind.
Well, that's the NBA for you. That's the think about yourself league. And everyone just thinks about themselves. And, you know, LeBron James, I think, wasn't necessarily the first one, but when he was announced he's taken his talents to Miami, you know, like everyone just thinks of themselves. And it's the only league that I'm aware of that really the players have more say in things or kind of control it compared to the owners. It seems to be a players' league and they kind of control everything compared to like the NHL. I don't see that happening. Maybe a bit in the NFL. I don't see that in Major League Baseball either. So, you know, I'm just shocked that the players have so much authority. I don't know if that's the right word to use, but they have so much leverage, and that just shocks me.
Well, and I think, Cameron, to your point, and you almost took the thought that was in my head right out of it. To your point, though, when you're making $170 million spanned out over 5 years, you automatically are given more chips because they're putting more stock into you. The coach is not making $170 million over 5 years. Look at what's happening with Edmonton. Connor McDavid is the star over there. He holds the chips. They've gone through countless amount of coaching changes. When you make the most money, moreover than the person of quote-unquote authority, that means you do have the power. And I think that's kind of where we're going. And I'm not suggesting that a coach should make $170 million because they're not playing the game. But when you do give a player in any professional sport that much money, it invariably has to go to their mind of, well, I'm making this much money, so I have a say here. And I think that's part of it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, because I don't know, and like Clara had said before, we really don't know what goes on behind the scenes or what's said. You know, it'd be interesting if Connor McDavid is saying anything or trying to influence anything. But, you know, in hockey, you don't hear about that as much as you do in the NBA, where you hear all the time that players have a say with management and they want this person or that person, and some more than others, a.k.a. LeBron James. But, yeah, I just think it happens, a heck of a lot more in the NBA than any other league that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong. I would imagine it happens more than we're made aware of in other leagues as well. And I think that's part of it moving forward as well. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Ben Simmons, whether he does play. He's supposedly not supposed to play the game tonight. So we'll see how long this takes and sort of who flinches first for the Philadelphia 76ers. We're going to wrap up that conversation and we're going to take a break and move towards discussing Major League Baseball playoffs, maybe even a little National Hockey League. You never know what happens when you come back from the commercial break. We'll continue the conversation with Mainstream Sports. Stay with us. Okay, we've calmed down from our heated conversation related to Ben Simmons. That was a fun conversation. If you missed it, go back to our podcast, wherever you get your podcast. It will be there for you in the podcast realm later on after the program. It's time to chat a little bit about the Major League Baseball playoffs, and I'm going to pull back the curtain and tell you that one Claire Buchanan said to me, quote, "I've been watching more Major League Baseball playoffs than hockey." So, Claire, I will let you lead off with the American League Championship Series thoughts.
Who would have thought that I'd be watching this much baseball, huh? I am actually having a blast watching both sides of the playoffs happening. But I'm finding the Boston and Houston series pretty exciting right now. It's more of a defensive games happening on that side. I know the Dodgers last night just embarrassed their opponent. So it's been a little more back and forth and tighter games on that side of it. So it's going to be exciting. I'm excited to watch the World Series when that comes.
Yeah. What's been the standout for you when you look at the American League Championship Series? Like, what is it that has you so gripped?
I never thought that they used this many pitchers, say, in a game. And I'm enjoying just learning more about baseball as a whole and the players involved and kind of the strategy of it. And growing up watching my sister play high level softball, it's it's a different game, but I'm really impressed and really like surprised how many pitchers are not only being used, but that are on a roster.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And that's why you get the people who say, oh, baseball takes so long because of the amount of pitching changes there are. And I mean,
it's just baseball, a lot of warm-ups happening.
yeah. Baseball goes by so much analytics. So I got to have this guy with right-hander, left-hander. And that's why they instilled the rule of when you come out of the bullpen, you have to have three batters, because they used to do it where you'd have like one guy'd come out for one guy and then you'd get a pitching change. And it was just like, oh, this is taking so long. But yes, it is fascinating to watch. I'm just fascinated by Boston and what they've been able to do as far as hitting grand slams. They've hit like two in this series, and it's just been amazing to watch. And then Houston just seems to be like the cardiac kids, and they come back, and it's just been a real back and forth series. It's going to be very fascinating to see what happens there. I personally think it's going to go seven games, and then it becomes a coin flip there. Cam, what say you on the National League Championship Series?
Well, it's been fun to watch so far, and especially Atlanta, we're up 3-1. Dodgers won game five to force a game six, and it looks like that they're going to head to Atlanta with Max Scherzer and Walker Buehler on full rest. So, and to be quite honest with you, last year Atlanta was also up 3-1, and the Dodgers ended up winning that series. So I think that maybe the Dodgers might be in their head and they might be able to pull this off again. I think it's going to go seven games. And yeah, like I said, I think the Dodgers might pull it off and win it.
Yeah, that's been the narrative that's been floating around. It's like, do they have demons that they were up 3-1, now it's 3-2. A lot of people say pitching isn't as good as it was last season, but this is going to be a good pitching matchup tomorrow night. And so I'm with you. I think it goes seven games. I'm curious, Cam, do you like in the Major League Baseball playoffs how they do two games in one ballpark, three games in the other, and then two in the same ballpark that had the first two? Or would you prefer it more hockey style where they go 2-2, 1-1-1?
No, I think that it's the best way, because if you want the players to be able to be at their best and playing their best, I think it's really good that they have two games and then three games and then another two games. Because especially if it's 1-1-1, all the travel that you have to do to go back and forth to those cities, the jet lag and so on and so forth, you're not getting the best players to be able to play the game at that point in time because of, you know, so many different factors of having to travel. So I really like the playoffs and the way they are in baseball.
Let's move over and chat a little bit of hockey for about 3 minutes or so. Which Canadian team do you think will do the best? Claire, let's start with you on this one.
Honestly, I think it's going to be hard to pick between both the Maple Leafs and the Oilers. Austin Matthews is healthy. His wrist is feeling a lot better, and he was one of the top scorers in the league last season, even with that injury. So I think he's going to be an insane force to stop. And he's got an entire support system behind him that is incredibly talented. And over there in Edmonton, we have Zach Hyman is fitting in just well with Edmonton as his new team. And obviously the likes of Connor McDavid is also scary on that aspect. So it's going to be, again, another toss-up between Toronto and Edmonton for that top spot.
You know, I think the Oilers, especially with Zach Hyman, I think that's going to make the world a difference. And he's already scored a goal and an assist. Maybe he has even more points than that. But I'm going to go with a sleeper pick here. And I think the Canucks are going to do really well this year. They got all the contracts sorted out. Everyone's there. I think the goalie's going to have a bounce back year. They're going to be healthier than they were last year. So I'm going to say that the Canucks are going to be kind of a sleeper team, and they're going to do quite well this year.
I am going to give you two teams. The first one I'm going to give you is the Winnipeg Jets. Yes, they're having some COVID protocol issue right now with Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. But I think that's going to be the best team for Canada. I think that they can have all the things going if they've got Hellebuck doing Hellebuck things. And I think that that's going to be a really good offensive team. I'm also going to throw out the fact that I think Ottawa is going to do well. They just signed, well, not well, they're going to be my sleeper pick to maybe squeak into the playoffs with just signing Brady Tkachuk to a $57.5 million contract extension. So for me, that's where I would think. It's going to be a great season, and that is the end of our show for this week. I'd like to thank Cam Jenkins, Claire Buchanan. I'd also like to thank our technical producer, Matt Agnew. Our technical supervisor is Paula Dineen, and our manager of AMI Audio is Andy Frank. Tune in next week, because you just never know what happens when you enter the neutral zone. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week. Be safe.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.